Good afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Nagler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Hope you're having a great Thursday wherever you are, whatever you're doing. And I hope that includes, you know, scrolling through the Cheesehead TV draft guide. That's right. It's available, folks. It is now available on the Cheesehead TV Patreon page. There is a link in the description of this video for you to get your own 2026 Pro Football Draft Guide from Cheesehead TV. Tons of great draft content. Draft is now, as of today, 2 weeks away. 2 weeks to go, people, but plenty of content for you to dive into there in the draft guide. Really hope you'll pick up your copy. Got plenty of content there, and not just rankings and breakdowns of prospects, though there is a ton of that. There is also a boatload of written articles, in-depth stuff that goes over not just the Packers roster, but the roster of all the teams in the NFC North. Tons of team needs stuff. I'm telling you, this thing is chock full of content goodness that you need in your life over the course of these next 2 weeks. Make sure you get your copy today. One of the things that I hope to see over the course of the next couple of weeks here is possibly a headline, breaking news. Maybe we get a rap sheet tweet at some point about the Packers extending Tucker Kraft, reaching some kind of an agreement. Don't forget, Brian Gutekunst said back at the season-ending presser, I believe it was, that they were going to be talking. They were talking to Tucker's folks, his people, his representatives, about a contract extension, the possibility of one. Looking around the league, you know, you see there in Atlanta, Kyle Pitts just signed his franchise tag, so that he was able to attend offseason workouts earlier this week. I believe that happened on Tuesday. In the free agent market, you have Isaiah Likely. He signed a 3-year deal, I believe it was, with the Giants. It was about $40 million. I suspect, obviously, Tucker Kraft will probably warrant a bigger commitment from the Green Bay Packers. But I do think it makes a whole lot more sense to strike now and get that deal done before other guys come along and set the market for the Packers. And I think the Pitts deal is the one to watch. They have until, I believe, early July, I want to say July 8th, to work out a long-term contract extension between Pitts and the Falcons. And if you're the Packers, I would suspect you want to get ahead of that. But we have certainly watched the Packers let the market set itself with other signings before. Maybe they go about it that way yet again and drag this out throughout the summer, and maybe they get something done right before training camp. We've certainly seen them do that, but I suspect they'd want to get this done because they also have Christian Watson in the fold, who somebody who I think they'll definitely be extending, and that's another most likely significant contract that they're going to have to work into whatever plans they have for the next couple years. They're undoubtedly going to be trying to balance what is already a bit of a top-heavy roster. That is why you look to 2027 and 2028, the way they have put together a boatload of selections there in the 2027 draft, lots of cheap labor going to be incoming. These big contracts, these big extensions, identifying the core of your team that you want to keep together into and through their prime, that's going to take a bit of juggling. No question about it. And you've already got the Jordan Love, Micah Parsons, Zach Toms of the world locked in. These are more core guys that you're going to want to try and go win a championship with sooner rather than later, is my mantra. Now, God knows Brian and Russ Ball don't need me to tell them how to go about things. They've got that well in hand. I just think this stretch here right before the draft be a perfect window for them to really get after it with Tucker and his people. And I know deadlines are what spur actions, and there's not really a deadline here coming up anytime soon, but I do think this window here prior to the draft would be a perfect opportunity to get it done and dusted and then turn their attention to Christian Watson post-draft into the summer. That's just guesswork on my part. I really just would love to get Tucker in the fold and Watson in the fold prior to the start of training camp. That's just my wish list. I know their mileage may vary. Hope you're all doing well. Good to see everyone chiming in. I know Soder has already got thoughts. Always good to see you, Soder. Before we get going, you guys know I got to give a shout out to our good friends over at ThetaCare.
Expertise follows inspiration. That's why more than a dozen of the nation's top cardiovascular specialists have chosen ThetaCare as their destination to deliver exceptional care. By infusing local care with new expertise throughout ThetaCare, we're creating a healthier future for all. Meet the experts at thetacare.org/heart.
All right, folks, what's on your mind? How are we doing today? We got Jason starting us off with a super chat. Thank you, Jason. Aaron, is a draft bust really a bust, or was he just overdrafted? How would you designate Hawk and Mandridge on these premises? Wow. That's a deep dive right there, Jason, starting us off. I mean, no, I would never, ever consider AJ Hawk a bust. I know he was not what Packers fans expected him to be, considering where he was selected. But no, he was a longtime starter, answered the bell, never missed games, helped them win a championship. I don't care that he wasn't like Ray Lewis 2.0. He was a really, really, really good player for the Green Bay Packers for a long time, who, again, was accountable, didn't miss games, played at a high level on a consistent basis for years. I get, again, that he wasn't the superstar that maybe Packers fans were hoping and or expecting because of his draft slot. But I always go back to something that Matt LaFleur said that I always thought even before he said it, but he kind of crystallized it when he talked about the fact that in his program, the way he views it, it doesn't matter how you got there. It matters what you do when you get there, right? Whether you are a first round pick or a seventh round pick or an undrafted free agent, those are just paths to the roster and to that practice field and to game day. It matters way more what you do when you get there. But that perception, especially in the modern era with the way the draft is so saturated in coverage, and there is so much discussion leading up to the draft, after the draft, draft grades, things of that nature, all of that just gets embedded in people's psyche and their consciousness, and that is how they view things, and that's how it's almost inescapable for a guy. Once he is drafted, that is his label. He is that and nothing more until he maybe, hopefully, supersedes that and overperforms considering where he was drafted. But even that, it's such a finite line in the draft, especially after you get past the first like 15, 17 guys. The margins talent-wise between selections is very minimal, and a big part, a huge component, and the thing that you can't quantify in draft coverage is situation. Where do they end up? What is the scheme they're working in? Who are their teammates? What's the coaching they're getting? There's so many things that go much further in determining whether a guy has a successful career or not. Now, obviously a huge component is his work ethic, what he does in that situation, but situation drives so much. AJ landed in a good situation. There's no doubt about that. And he produced. I understand the running jokes, yes, he made a lot of tackles, but a lot of them were downfield, etc. I understand all that. But man, you couldn't ask much more of AJ Hawk. You know, I'll never, ever, ever listen to, draft bust talk about AJ. Tony Mandrich, yeah, that's a bust. there's very little doubt that labeling Tony a bust is fair, right? Considering how little the Packers got for that investment and considering all the players they missed on by selecting him instead of any number of future Hall of Famers, that's a tough one to come back from as far as trying to make the case that it wasn't a bust. That's a bust, right? No, but to your first question, is a draft bust really a bust, or was he just overdrafted? My response to that is something that I've been saying for, I want to say, 2 decades now, and some people scoff at this or roll their eyes, but I 1,000,000,000% believe it. And I remember Mike McCarthy kind of alluding to this at one point and something he said, all players have value. Now, you can talk about the relative value to your team, your program, your roster, what you're running, how they're doing in practice, and whether you're getting what you were hoping when you made the investment, right? But yeah, every single player in the NFL has value, and your job as a coach or as an organization is to get the most out of them and hopefully extract as much value as you can from the player. But you don't get to the NFL without being able to play. You can play the game like better than 90% of the humans on the face of the planet, right? More than that, 95, 98, whatever. Like, this is the top 1% of athletes that can do what these guys do. So you get to the NFL, you know, Mike said, they're all good players. So in the vein of your question, there's some validity to that. I think every player has a value, has value without question. But perception of value, that's where things definitely go off the rails, especially online, which is why I've really stepped back from a lot of that over the last couple of years, because I don't think it's productive. And I do think that people get warped perceptions of these players because of priors, which is the joke we always hear about, especially when it comes to Jordan Love. But I think that extends to most players. I mean, think about when you see a guy performing on Sunday afternoon in an NFL game, and let's say you haven't heard of him. You don't know the name, right? And he's a wide receiver on somebody else's team, but he has a decent game. Let's say he puts up like 5 or 6 catches, maybe a little over 100 yards and a touchdown. You're like, who is this kid? And you hear, oh, well, he's a 5th-round pick who just got his chance this week or this year, whatever. And you're like, oh my God, that's a great investment, right? But then you see a guy struggling, or he sucks, or he gets blown off the ball in a block or whatever, and you're like, who's this guy? And, oh, that was their 1st-round pick. Oh, he's terrible. What a waste. What a bum. What a bust, right? All it is a snapshot. But the perceptions in the moment while you're watching that player are, I'm not going to say warped, but they're so strong. Once you find out how that player was acquired, all of a sudden you are coming to it with a perspective that is already kind of solidified in your mind, when obviously that player is way more than just that player, that game, the work he's doing all week in practice, all off season on his own, etc. Like, that's why the value discussion really kind of drives me nuts. All players have value. Beer and Ball Show, what's going on, Andy? I hope you're well, man. Craft extension week 8-ish? How about week negative 16-ish? Let's do it now. I don't want to wait till the middle of the season. And I understand the idea of he's coming off a injury. You want to wait and see. Maybe he does as well. I think Soder said it before we started. You know, maybe Tucker wants to bet on himself. That's down to the player, right? But I suspect they'd want to get this thing done before the season starts. But we'll see. Brandy Lewis, 2 days in a row. How are you? Hubby can finally have a man cave. Quintessential Packers item that every fan needs in their space. Ooh, that's a really good question, Brandy. I'm going to leave that open to the crowd, to the group here, because gosh knows lots of folks are going to have lots of ideas for myself, and it's just for me. I mean, obviously, if you're talking about a man, I need a very, very comfortable chair. More than anything else, any television stuff on the wall, beer fridge, got to have a beer fridge. All of this is great and ideal, but I got to have the most comfortable chair possible. That's a number one, because I'm going to be spending a lot of time in it. E4, how you doing, man? Doesn't matter how you got here. Only thing that matters is what you do. Great lyrics for a song opening. There you go. Maybe that's the next Motel Men track. I like it. I like where your head's at. Doug Hype. How you doing, brother? Saw Tyler's breakdown of Hargrave. He is good. I agree. I know the knock has been that he hasn't been as productive since really his time with the 49ers and then in Minnesota. I do think he is going to maybe not look reborn, but he's going to be more productive in Gannon's defense. I know I talked about this a couple weeks ago when he was signed, but he certainly seemed to bristle about towards the end of his time in Minnesota, how he was being used, what he was asked to do, especially on passing downs. You know, I said it then, I'll say it again, that the scheme is the focal point in Minnesota, you know, and I do think Gannon's going to let him get upfield and get after the quarterback a little bit more than he was asked to in Minnesota. Now, that said, got to eat your vegetables. You got to earn the right to rush the passer, and that is where his play has noticeably slipped over the years. He has got to be a lot more consistent against the run. And I do think there's a chance there for him to prove it, but that is where teams will test him, especially if he's out there on early downs. I'm Jim Rat. What's up, man? You spot on, man. People rightfully make a big deal about Tom Brady being a sixth round pick, but Bart Starr, round 17. How the hell did that happen? Well, you look at him, he's kind of the same thing with Brady, right? Not a imposing specimen. Certainly the guy could play, he could sling it. But I do think even back then, the draft process was much more about production and what you could do athletically, et cetera, rather than, okay, getting to know the guy, getting to know the player. And, you know, Bart's superpower was his kind of will to win, his ability to not just command the team and call the offense, which, never forget, he called his plays, right? Like, it's an offense designed by Vince Lombardi, but he was the play caller on the field. You know, it's kind of stuff that's unquantifiable and kind of hard to discern in a draft process. So, and never forget when he first got drafted, he was not automatically the starter. Like, they bounced between quarterbacks for quite some time under Vince until Vince finally committed to Bart. You know, sometimes it just takes taking control and full advantage of an opportunity for not only people to see what you're capable of, but also for you to unlock your capabilities and your full potential. Never forget it. Never forget that. And that is, the Bart thing is a perfect example of what I'm talking about, where it doesn't matter how you get there. It matters what you do when you do. It matters when you arrive, how you control your attitude, your effort, and all the things that you can control in that situation. Jason, thanks again, man. Mark it down. We'll sign DJ Reader post-draft and draft Dennis Sutton at 52. Hold me to it. Gonna hold you to it, Jason. I hear you on the DJ Reader thing, especially post-draft, because it won't count, or it wouldn't count against the comp pick formula. I think there are going to be a lot of other teams with that idea, though, which is why I suspect there's probably, my guess would be, someone signs him just before the draft to jump that line, right? I think most teams are thinking, okay, after the draft, we can sign him and it won't count against the comp pick formula, which opens the door for someone to jump that line by, yeah, signing him, say, the week of the draft, week leading into the draft. We'll see. I mean, that would be my guess right now, but I would love it. I'd love that addition. No question about it. Ooh, Rai. That's a question right there. Better QB at their peak, Rodgers or Marino? I got to say Rodgers, and I know I'm a homer, but Marino is the best thrower. And I know that's saying a lot when you're talking about Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was insane, absolute assassin, no question about it. But man, you give Marino protection and receivers who can work downfield, I don't think we'll ever see anything that pinpoint amazing with throwing the football on time, perfect spot, blah, blah, blah. That's going to be hard to beat, at least that I've seen, right? But as far as overall playing the position, it's Rodgers. He could do more. I think they're both really athletic, obviously. Rodgers' ability to create outside the pocket and do a lot of the stuff as far as downfield while breaking contain and going off script and all of that for such a long time at such a high level. Yeah, man, I got to give it to Rodgers. What else we got here, folks? Yes, Menace, that is basically how it breaks down. If Romeo Doubs gets 1,000 yards in New England, his pick, the comp pick for the Packers, becomes a third. That's also coupled with, obviously, to get 1,000 yards would necessitate him staying on the field. There is a playtime component to it, but yeah, that's right. Soder, you're probably right with this. Marino may have done more with less. I don't doubt that, you know, there's certainly some truth to that, especially I remember last year, there was some kind of retrospective on, and somebody in some doc that I was watching, I can't remember what it was, but they said, like, you know, every summer or going into training camp, it was Shula would talk about, this is the year we're going to run the ball more. You know, we got to take some pressure off our quarterback. And then, you know, by October, they were throwing it 45 times a game. in the early 80s, right? So, yeah, they certainly wore Dan out. No question about that. Kevin, how you doing, man? Regarding Starr, it's also true that he didn't have a lot of production his senior year at Bama, largely due to injury and opportunity. Yeah, that's akin. Yeah, that's offshoot of what I was talking about as far as, you know, when they were drafting way, way before we were talking about, like, a lot of the athletic testing that we have now. But, yeah, production drove a big component of it, right? And that's not totally untrue today either. But, yeah, you're spot on there. No question about it. Right. How would Holmgren use Love differently than LaFleur? Well, he'd have a short game, and there would be no shotgun. Everything would be drop back. That would be interesting to see. No question about it. But, yeah, I love the story. I can't remember if it was Frank Winters, but someone told the story of, you know, one summer, I think it's the middle of Holmgren's tenure, they start training camp, and they're going to install the shotgun. And the first snap, I believe it was, sailed right over Favre's head, and Mike was like, that's enough of that. And they went back to never using the shotgun. Cheeto, what's going on, man? Does LaFleur need to get better at situational live game management or pregame planning, sticking to the script or adjusting going off script? It's a good question. It's hard to say without knowing pinpoint exactly what the plans have been going into certain games, right? For all we know, you know, the good stuff has been scripted and the bad stuff has been kind of him trying to adjust to things that the defense is doing. I'll tell you what, though. That second half of that Bears playoff game is a bad look. What is interesting, though, is when they started blitzing off the edge with their DBs, they really put the Packers offense in a bind, and they didn't really have much of an answer. And that's why I'm talking about the short game. They never really had a short game to get to. It didn't feel like it anyway, which is something that McVay struggled with. It's how, you know, Belichick beat him in that first Super Bowl. And then you kind of look the next week, that Rams playoff game in Chicago, they came out attacking the Rams the exact same way, and it gave the Rams fits. They had McVay still had issues with it. So, I mean, that's Dennis Allen. I mean, I get the Packers, like, put up some points and certainly moved the ball and did some good things, but he is a very good defensive coordinator. And he certainly got LaFleur's, you know, lunch money that night at Soldier Field. So yeah, I mean, between those two things, I think the most obvious answer is in-game stuff, but at the same time, it's really hard to say when you're not privy to what the calls are, what they're trying to adjust to, what they're stated, you know, adjustments are going to be as far as, like, who's on the party line saying, okay, they're doing this, we need to try to get to this, or we need to go to this play or whatever. And then maybe they're getting to the line of scrimmage and they have a good play call on, and Jordan sees something at the line, and you see how Jordan, you know, is making a lot of checks and a lot of calls at the line. Maybe he's getting them into something that, you know, maybe isn't the best answer for what Dennis Allen is throwing at him, etc. There's so many different components lining up together that you got to make sure you have everyone on the same page. Maybe that's something that they look at this offseason. One of the things LaFleur talked about at the owners meetings, stripping it down, right? Getting back to square one with the offense and building back up around Jordan. Maybe that's something they look at. But to me, it's got to be getting at least finding a short game that you can rely on and turn to in game. If you are having the troubles that they were having in that second half. All right, everybody, I got to get going. I cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers each and every day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Please do me a monster favor. Hit like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and then tell your friends and tell your family, Cheesehead TV, we are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. Go Pack, go.